This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
I just want to do things my own way, you know.
Countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, from the hallowed confines of Trinidad World Recording Studio, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, where you too should come record. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Come see all we have to offer. Check it out. We'll make you sound fantastic. Also, book the full band, 817-733-5256. Don't be shy. I'll call you right back. Or I'll pick up the phone. We'll set something up. The band will be in your backyard in no time. Rockin', getting the cops called. Thrilling the neighbors. Infuriating the old lady down the street. How you doing, everybody? Phil Pritchett here. Man, oh man, what a few weeks we've had here on the podcast. The great Matt Pivato joining us. Have you enjoyed that, man, at the perspective of a hallowed Texas music booking agent, looking back on his rise and his turbulent times in the Texas music world? Well, we're pleased to announce he will be here today in our second segment, the great Matt Pivato, talking more about his, where all this stuff headed. Booking all these bands, booking these festivals, dealing with sponsors and artists and booking agents and people and the phone ringing constantly. Oh, man, he's got some great stories. He will continue with the third and final segment of this interview. Gosh, it's just been like a 60 minutes exclusive, hadn't it been? Hard to track down, Matt Pivato. But we have our third segment here coming up, so look forward to that later in the show. Well, I was getting my hair cut a couple days ago. I know what you're thinking to yourself. Phil, just sitting in a gilded chair. You know, my own barber in some marbled room. I hope that's what you think right off the top of your head, but I'm telling you right now, sadly, you're mistaken. No. I just go up here next to the, in the strip mall to whatever they got up there, the Pro Cuts, the Great Clips, whatever. I just sit in there with the unwashed masses. And, just wait my turn. I got the wavy hair. I don't know. If it's a bad haircut, I just sort of mess it up or put on my cowboy hat. My hair's not a big thing for me. It just, you know, keep it within reasonable levels. I just cut it short. I let it grow long. I cut it about 3 times a year. It's not very often. So I'm in there. And who do they got working in there? These sweet girls. But, you know, they're like 21 maybe. Kind of orange, spiky hair. And it's okay, come on. So I sit in the chair. And there's all these, they're all in there cutting hair. And they're playing a little classic rock radio, you know, on the over the speakers. little Fleetwood Mac comes on. I'm kind of like, all right, you know. Well, all of a sudden, the girl cutting my hair goes, do we have to listen to this stuff? Can't we listen to something else? And one of the other young girls cutting hair says, yeah, let's put on some country. How about some country? And the girl cutting my hair with the spiky orange hair, she says, yeah, I'm not that big a fan of country. Some of it's okay, I guess. She's like smacking gum right in my ear. I'm just keeping my mouth shut, you know, just sitting in the chair. She goes, I don't know. She goes, I really don't like this new country stuff, you know. I don't really don't like this new country. I like the old country, the classics, the legend country, the old guys. So I kind of nod my head. I go, yeah, you're telling me. Yeah, man, I hear you. Impressed that some young, you know, girl with spiky hair would maybe like some old country. And she continues. She goes, yeah. And she goes, like what? She goes, well, you know, just the old guys, you know, like Pat Green. Oh, and with that, I just threw my hair, threw my head back and just let out a laugh, a guffaw, completely uncontrollable laughter on my part. Then all these girls look at me and go, what? I'm just going, oh, nothing. I was equally stunned and amazed. First of all, that Pat would be a legend. You know, and he certainly is on a lot of levels. I said, man, I can't wait to tell Pat. He's a legend. Not only is he a legend, but he is old. He is old. Of course, I'm sitting in the chair talking about classic country, the old guys. I'm like, yeah, man, right on. I'm thinking, of course, Willie and Johnny Cash, you know, these gray-haired, bearded guys. I'm like, man, it's amazing that this girl would like the old guys of country. Now, to this girl, an old guy was Pat. You know, Pat, I mean, I think me and Pat are the same age. Oh, man. It was great. So they go, they're just laughing. They what? I kind of go. Well, I said, man, I said I'm in the music business. I said I kind of know Pat, you know. And they're like, no way. I said, I didn't want to name drop. I just felt like I had to explain why I was laughing so hard. I said, you know, I said, man. She goes, well, tell him he's great. Or we like him. I'm like, tell him yourself. I go, he lives around here, you know, somewhere. He's like, what are you talking about? What? I go, man, he's up there at the. I said, going to the Tom Thumb down here. He's in here shopping, you know, buying eggs just like everybody else. So I'll have to mention that to Pat next time I see him in the store, that he's not only old. Well, it's a double-edged deal. He's old, of course, but he's also a legend. I aspire to be both of those things someday. Apparently, I'm already old. Boy, speaking of the grocery store, can I just air a grievance here? Look, I'm efficient. I get in there. I got the kids in the cart. I roll. You know, bread, vegetables, fruit, boom. Grab the coffee, get the eggs, milk out, you know, get something for dinner. I'm quick, I'm efficient, I know what aisles to go down, what aisles to avoid. It's fast, it's efficient, in and out. Well, the kids eat turkey, you know, they slice turkey for lunch. I have always tried to buy just the prepackaged Oscar Mayer turkey. I'm like, it's all the same stuff. No, they like the deli turkey, which I understand, okay, right, I like it too. But man, nothing beats me more. I've already talked about this in the podcast. Forgive me if I have, but this came up again the other day. The ceremony, the sacred ceremony of the deli beats me to no end. And here's what happens. You go to the deli counter, you can't get anybody's attention. There's just people milling around and they all look like they're dressed. They got, you know, the plastic, hair nets on, they got plastic gloves, apron, like they're performing surgery. Like this is something so important. This is a pure sanitation zone. I'm like, what's going on? I go, just slice me off some turkey. Well, what kind of turkey you want, sir? We got all this kind. I'm like, so I picked the honey maple, you know. I'm just trying to get through here. The kids are squirming in the cart. Then the guy, okay, and he gets the turkey. And he puts it in the machine, you know, and he slices a piece and he holds it up reverently like this thick. I'm like, that's just fine. Can you just slice it up? How much do you want? A pound, just roughly a pound, you know. He nods. Sheena goes back, zoom, slicing the bird, you know, like this thick. That's just fine. That's like this much. Yeah. So he finally gets a pile of it. He takes the pile. He holds it. You want to taste it? I'm like, I don't want to taste it. I already know what turkey tastes like. Just give me the turkey, please. Then he puts it on the scale, and, it's a few. I'm like, that's fine. He goes, well, hold on. He slices a couple more to get it to right about a pound. Then he wraps it up. The whole time I'm thinking, and the old ladies in front of me in line, oh, they're just sampling. Let me taste the hickory. Let me taste the mesquite. Let me taste the honey glazed. And there's this surgery, this cutting going on. Now, I would understand this if they had an actual turkey back there. Like, and somebody with a big knife goes, hey, Phil, what part of the turkey do you want? You want some dark meat off the leg and the thigh, or slice some white off the breast? That'd be fine. Like a butcher shop, like, hey, what slice of meat you want? That's fine. But for crying out loud, we're slicing sodium, embalmed processed meat here. I don't care what you think your turkey is. It's just processed meat. It is a compressed football of some kind of meat, injected with all kinds of stuff to keep it's not fresh food. So the ceremony of it drives me crazy. So I'm sitting here sampling, sizing, weighing, watching the old people, watching the guys in their surgery scrubs working on this turkey. I'm like, how come they can't just slice this stuff up in the morning, stick it in some bags in the refrigerator like I have in my house, and I can swing by and grab a bag on my way, just like I buy everything else? I wouldn't sit there and say, I'd like some Velveeta cheese. I just buy the prepackaged slices to make grilled cheese for the kids. You know what I mean? I don't sit there and say, hey, can you slice that Velveeta? Let me see the thickness. Let me sample a taste. Can you weigh it? Can you wrap it into... I wouldn't sit there all day to get cheese. I just go get some cheese. So that is my complaint, my rant for the day. The deli, it's not fresh meat, folks. It is embalmed in... It's like in formaldehyde of sodium. So let's slice it up and put it in a bag so Phil and all his kids can get it and move on. But everyone likes to think they're making a choice and preparing something sacred. The deli meat. I'm out. And you know who's standing next to me in line? Pat Green there. Old legendary Pat. Hey, Matt Pivato coming up with some more great booking agent stories right here in our next segment. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Matt Pivato, stay tuned. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Yes, yes, you should be saying to yourself, I need to go record with Phil. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me 817-733-5256. We have a beautiful studio here. It's a whole experience. It's not just recording like you go to your buddy's recording deal wherever you are. This is an adventure. Your new direction awaits here. Perhaps you've recorded some tracks in your bedroom or your buddy's garage. You're like, that sound pretty good. I think they sound pretty good. But you don't know about mixing and adding on to stuff. Look, put it on a hard drive. Mail it to me up here at the studio. I'll put it in my machine. Add the glorious tones and harmonics. Oh, that accompany, that saturate all, every favorite recording you've ever heard in your life. Add some organ on there, some guitar backing vocals if you like. Master it. Send it back to you. So many ways of doing it. We do it all here. Well, well, well. What a... Man, this is just like doing a PBS Ken Burns documentary or something. We've had Matt Pivato here just walking us through his experience in the Texas music world. The early, early, early days of myself, Pat Green, oh geez, Jack Ingram, Roger Kreger, Randy Rogers, just what we were all doing. We all have one thing in common. The only good booking agent you could have, aside from Greg Henry at the time, who booked Pat and Ragweed, was Matt Pivato. And he joins us here now in today's age. And, man, we talked about how you got into the business a few weeks ago. We talked about, man, being there in the peak, taking care of Craiger. I can't remember how many phone calls I had with Matt trying to figure out, you know, I'm calling my booking agent, Matt. Man, how come we don't have any dates in February? Where are we going? My grass in the yard is dead.
Yes.
I need money. I got children.
I can't prove I'm a musician.
Yeah, that was one of my things. Like, Matt, I couldn't prove I'm a musician after all the gear got stolen.
Yeah.
If someone came to my house and said, what do you do, Phil? I could say, I'm a musician. Prove it. I'm like, I can't. I don't have a guitar. I'm out of T-shirts. I'm out of CDs.
My grass
is dead in the front yard. My agent won't call me back. But so many phone calls ended with Matt going, I got to go to the Craiger gig tonight. I got to go to this seminar. I'm like, what? You go, got to keep the sharks off Craiger. I got to keep sharks off Craiger. Those guys were around. All those William Morris guys or whoever, they knew that Craiger was booking some big numbers.
Absolutely.
And I was always a little, I understood their frustration. I knew a lot of guys in the national booking world. I don't know, just through people. That always spoke so scathingly of Matt Pivito. Oh, Pivito, and kind of the deal was though you there was a large long moment in there where you ran a lot. You booked those big festivals. You booked Craiger, and a lot of these guys hated having to get you on the phone or get their act on your bill. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you got a 28, 29
but it always made me snicker a little bit. I'm like, Pivito. Yeah. I go, you can't, you know, you're running around. You got girlfriends all over the state living here and there.
These
big agents are just, man, this Pivito, who is this freaking guy? So I'm just like, well, you gotta stay on him. I thought that was so funny. I always took a little, yeah. I took a little enjoyment in that always. It's like, yeah, you gotta get Pivito to,
give
his blessing to be on any of these Ziegenbach gigs or whatever it was.
Yeah, so. It was interesting. Those guys, those agents who are, been doing it for 20, 30 years.
Yeah, right.
Are booking, are, and that was the time in the mid 2000s that,
Texas, the festivals in Texas, the grosses were just astronomical.
Yeah, absolutely.
The contracts bands got for, come on, when Budweiser writes Phil Pritchard and the full band a big check, you're at a peak.
Yes.
I don't know what, it wasn't what some of these other guys got, but it was still something I was just like, holy cow, is this what we're doing now? We're all going to get money for drinking beer? I'm like, oh my gosh, you know. It was quite a time to be playing music in this state, and everybody in the country kind of saw that, I guess.
You had all these agents in Nashville that have been doing it for 20, 30 years. And then they see me, some kid to them.
Right.
And a kid.
Who's this Roger Craiger guy?
You got Greg Henry doing the same thing.
Ragweed coming up, guys like that.
Yeah. And I'm booking all these big business.
Yeah.
And then they're not getting their top 40 guys on these fairs and festivals down here. And then they're really starting to get bitter.
Yeah, that's right.
And
the $20,000 date that used to go to to Neil McCoy. Now they're like, what? We got Randy Rogers playing. What? Who the hell's that? He just plays in Texas. Like, well, that's who people want.
So the same people that were snickering and flapping their jaws and to you about me or Greg were sitting there calling me the same day going, I want this act that we've never heard of. Put Miranda Lambert in front of Roger at Gypsy Tea Room. Like, who? Miranda? Who?
Yeah, right.
I will do you a favor. I will put Miranda in front of Roger at Gypsy Tea Room.
Yeah.
Well, perfect. Way Morris is happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Now Miranda's king of the world, queen of the world.
Right, right. Yeah, that's right.
But,
it was a weird time. It was certainly one thing that's the war people talk about. Man, it must be nice to book yourself, you know. And I just kind of, I don't even consider it booking. I don't do a lot of active. I get emails from people wanting me to play private parties or occasional festival and it's enough. You know, I say, okay, you know, and then I'll hunt some guys down. Hey, we need to get back in there. But it's not a whole lot of deal on my part. But what the biggest disadvantage of doing that I've learned after being on your roster for all those years was, you know, there is strength in numbers. And I can't tell you how many times that I was needing a date on that Saturday and you would just kind of shrug your shoulders and go, I'll get you on opening for Craiger at Green Hall or something.
Eli,
like, maybe it wasn't a ton of money, but I'm like, oh, sweet. So we might break even, but man, we're playing in front of 600 people, whatever, Green Hall, just sold out. I'm like, man, it's still a good gig. I could always count on Craiger. I mean, he was on the roster. You know, if some big festival got booked, it'd be me and Honey Brown and Roger.
Or Eli Young. Eli Young made a T-shirt that said, Roger's Craiger's opening band.
Yeah.
And had Eli Young's
They is that right? I never
yes.
saw that.
And you know what? I wish I had that T-shirt. Yeah, and they all wore it at the firehouse one night.
Oh, is that right?
When they got paid $200 up front for Roger.
Yeah. But those gigs were handy to have, and Roger drew big crowds, and it was always a little weird because we were more kind of this rock and roll band that rolled around on the stage. Craig was a country band, but
it worked.
It worked. We garnered a lot of fans from that. People would say, man, I kind of like Craig. I was just in Green Hall that night. That was the first time I ever saw you guys play. You know, that pays dividends down the road. I mean,
absolutely.
It certainly has. And so it was an advantage. Now, you know, by yourself, which a lot of bands are kind of by themselves, and it is hard to just find those little things here and there that are going to help you get through, you know, without being on some kind of a roster with some leverage. It's just leverage is all it is.
So that's what, like when I was doing the Ziggy and Buck shows.
Right. How'd you get into that, by the way? This was what year? What was the first one?
Excuse me.
Everyone knows the Ziggy and Buck shows.
2004.
You had those in spring, College Station.
Started the one in spring in 2004.
That was the first one?
And then 2005, I did spring and then Brian.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 07, I did Corpus. So 07, 08, or 08, 09, I did Corpus. So I did three, and basically you booked all the artists, which were a lot of my roster.
Now, that wasn't a conflict of interest at some level?
You know, but I was I mean, the promoter paying the art, you know, conflict of interest.
Well, you got no complaints from me. We were on the bill.
So I did all the Ziggy and Buck shows.
Right.
And those were...
I just remember those really occupied your time.
Yeah, and at the time...
Because there was a lot of work, a lot of risk.
Yeah, a lot of you can't imagine. So, yeah, I was booking 5 or 10 bands, doing the festivals, had an online ticketing company.
And that was a year of work to make the spring...
Either a lot of money or lose a lot of money.
Yeah, and the night before, you're still up all night crying because it might rain.
Literally.
Yeah. I mean,
and at the time, I got married in 2004. In 2003, had my son in 2005, and the 2005 was the big year of booking, and I started getting to the Ziggy and Buck shows, and I was working 12, 16-hour days, and everybody used to make fun of me when they'd get emails at 5 o'clock in the morning from me, and I'm just like, dude, if I'm at the office by 5, I'm behind by 10.
Right.
So I did all the Ziggy and Buck shows, which were I had a lot of fun doing them. And the first 10... Did great.
That was just all, you know,
great.
Us and
I was
Craiger, Ragweed,
right.
Jack. I don't know.
I had Jack. Yeah. Oh, I had all those guys on those festivals.
Sure.
And had Randy open up a couple of festivals for a couple hundred bucks.
Right.
Rogers.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so I did 10 of those. And in the meantime, towards the end of those festivals, I bought a bar
To the dirt.
Okay, I'm gonna take the floor. Here we go. This is gonna be an earth-shattering comment to all of these your fans out there.
Graveyards are filled with guys.
If anybody hands you a bar, hand it right back to them.
Yeah.
And if they hand you a bar with a park on it and a lake on it, now that's something to pay attention to.
Right.
Which I got into of May of 07.
Right.
And
Still there.
Four years later.
Doing great.
Down there,
Lake Bryan.
So there for 07, 08,
uh-huh.
I was promoting festivals, booking a bunch of bands. I bought the bar, which is on an 800-acre lake that I leased from the city of Bryan, that we have 40,000 cars through there a year, three, four people per car. And that was the year that 08 was the defining year of I will look back if I'm able to live past 50.
Come on now.
If I'm able to live past 50, I will look back at 08 and say this was my defining moment of the year. This was the turning point of my life. And that was the year that I...
Well, that was the year of...
The divorce. That was the year of the... over a period of a divorce is most importantly, you're negotiating the rest of your life with your child.
Right.
I did a couple of festivals.
Plus, you had the world economy tanking. You think that had something to do with it? I mean, that all went down, too. Lehman Brothers.
Everything was changing.
I mean, everything. Just the budgets for festivals. It all just kind of went down the tubes.
And it all went down
the
tubes.
And someone said it hadn't come back on a lot of that kind of level.
Absolutely.
City budgets. And so, I mean, it hadn't changed much.
So I...
So 2008.
Summer of 08. And that's when... God, I had a big cancer scare that year.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I had a huge...
You think it was just the stress? Golly, you were just running around doing all this stuff.
And
smoking like a chimney.
Oh, God. God bless America.
I mean, just...
Wow. So I was under
all of
stress.
Us were having discussions behind your back, just like, man, he's going off the rails.
And I was.
He doesn't sleep. He doesn't eat. He's just smoking. He's stressed that this festival's going to break him. There's the divorce, selling that, keeping both of the businesses.
Yeah. And in the meantime, which a lot of people didn't know about until that September that year, I was making some business decisions that I was relying on some advice and some I was aware of and some I wasn't that
right.
was some really poor choices
right.
that I made that summer that had a lot to do with the festivals, that had a lot to do with the lack of success of the last three festivals.
Yeah. Now
Settlement.
let me ask a question, and this is removed from your booking
mm-hmm.
situation and all this. The festivals, man, there was just such a heyday there.
Absolutely.
I mean, those first Ziegenbach shows we played, I was on stage. I couldn't believe how many people were out there. And they were a great time, and they were all over the state. I mean, we'd get called. We'd go play the Holland Corn Festival. We'd go play the Bay Fest, and we'd play anywhere. The windblown lake up there, you know, and Buffalo Springs
yeah.
Lake, you know, 2-7 in the morning.
Yep.
But there was just always some festival that was giving you free food and some good money, and that's how we did it. And what do you think there was a – and I feel like it's – man, a lot of those have gone away. A lot of them have never come back.
It's the oversaturation of
music. Is it just over – do you think you were a victim of that in some ways?
No, I was a victim of doing everything my sponsor told me to do.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't have. I should have put my foot down and said, no, I don't need this artist on this bill.
Well, this is coming to my point. Was there pressure to, at the zero hour, put another big name on the bill?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that what started to happen? Because tickets were slow? Is that what was happening?
No, I was choosing not to say no to some ideas that a major sponsor had. Ultimately, I'm responsible for.
Yeah.
I agreed to do it at the time. I looked back and she said, no, lesson learned.
Right.
But that was that summer where I started really getting into big time exposure to festivals.
Yeah.
And and lost a ton of money.
I mean, what?
And,
if you don't mind me asking, what was the first festival that didn't do good?
The Corpus Christi, when I was staying in a foot of water the day before the festival. I'm sitting here, wow, this festival might cost me about $90,000.
Oh my God!
Might be a $90,000 ticket.
So what was that? When was that?
That was in 2007.
Now this was where at the baseball park?
No, this was at North Beach in Corpus Christi, right next to the Radisson.
Was it called Ziegenbach?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then I had the OA.
Who'd you have on there?
I tried to. I don't try not to think about it.
Okay.
I've erased that out of my memory. Fast forward to 08. I put Blue October on the show, put two stages.
Was this on a Corpus again?
Yep. Same place. I went back to the scene of the crime. I got my
doubled
ass.
Doubled down.
I got my ass handed to me again.
So that was Blue October.
And I try to forget that one, too.
Okay,
so fast
okay.
forward.
Well, I'm just curious what moves. I'm interested because I don't know the whole story. I mean, were there some pivotal decisions and moments? And not that it's the act's fault. I'm not saying it, but the combination
my
of the bill
choice,
and it didn't work.
My choice of putting on, to be honest with you, Blue October and uh-huh. Corpus was a poor business. A great band, worth tickets.
Sure.
But not for that event.
Right.
Clint Black. My last event and the last day I worked in music, per se, was in the Labor Day of 08.
Labor Day of 08. Now, this was at Lake Bryant.
No, this is Labor Day of 09. I'm sorry.
Was
Labor Day of 09.
Yeah. Was this at spring?
This was in Bryant.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's when I put Clint Black, the sponsor, really wanted me to put Clint Black on the bill.
Kind of at the zero hour, wasn't it?
About 2 months out, 3 months out. I said, yeah, that's a good idea. But I shouldn't have.
He was huge money. You know?
Huge money. I mean, by a brand new loaded Suburban for what he cost.
Yeah, yeah.
And great artist, just wasn't a great artist for the bill. And then that's when that Labor Day weekend of actually of 09, 08 and 09 time period, that summer of 09, that's when the poor choices I made on the accounting the business world caught up to me that summer that were related from the divorce, from all this other crap. And so that after Labor Day weekend, that's when I woke up. That next day and realized I'm out. I'm gone. I'm not doing this anymore. 13 years of what I've lived and breathed, it's over.
Yeah.
And it was the biggest relief of my life. I would talk about it months after and would tear up because out of just sheer relief. That's finally, oh, I don't have to kiss any more artist's ass. I don't have to tell them what they want to hear anymore. I don't have to worry about my phone blowing up. I don't have to carry two cell phones. I don't have to have two cell phones and an office phone all going at the same time. And it's over. It's peaceful. And I have the bar and the Lake Bryan and to focus on, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I've been out of music at a full-time capacity for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. You've just been running the bar? I mean,
running the bar. And
P2's been down there playing occasionally.
That's
right.
I got
acoustic
Phil,
sets.
I've had Ingram out there, Charlie.
Me and Owen and Fred Andrews, Honey Brown. We did a fun song swap down there. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Shaver, Ray Hubbard. Gary P. Nunn, Todd Snyder.
Yeah.
Great. Voted best live music in Brown College Station.
That's a great setup y'all got out there.
So I've been out for 2 years.
So what are your future plans?
Well, about a couple of weeks ago, a week ago, I got a phone call from...
Do we have a big announcement coming here?
This is kind of a seminal moment. The drum roll.
Okay, you've been out of music now for a while.
A couple of years.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd ever get back in. Uh-oh. But I've struggled with the idea that I have 13 years of experience.
It's what you know.
It's what I lived and breathed.
Yeah.
I would like to think I know what I'm doing.
Right.
I'd like to think I have
And even
knowledge.
Running the bar, you're still in the music. You're still booking
bands.
Well,
that's
Jack.
Ingram said, Jack called me up.
You've never been out.
Jack called me up about a year ago. He says, Pivato, come on, don't kid yourself. You're not a music business. You're still booking bands at your bar. And I'm like, but Jack, it's not the same. You know,
but it's still
in the same realm. I make my money off of live music at the bar. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To get back in the booking side of the world, Fred Andrews called me up a couple weeks ago.
Freddie.
And he said, dude, have you ever thought about getting back in again? And I've had a few rumblings of phone calls over the past few months.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, let me think about it. Mm-hmm. And everything at the bars, I got a great GM, Cody Johnson, and a great staff up there. We had a great banner year. And now I don't really have to be up there very much.
Uh-huh.
So Fred called me up and said, hey, would you be interested in getting back in at this creative capacity that we're still talking about? And here in the next coming couple of weeks, I will be getting back in, booking bands again.
Booking bands.
Yes. So I haven't named a company yet.
Right,
we're thinking about that right now, what I'm going to name it. But it's exciting, and it's fun to get back into what I know the most. I think I've kidded myself for 2 years I didn't miss it when I really did.
Yeah.
And there's some things I need to do. You know, I've tried to right some wrongs that I did the summer of 2009 and been working on that for the past couple of years. And, you know, so there's a few people out there I'm going to make a couple of phone calls to and visit with. But at the end of the day, I'm going to get back in.
Yeah.
Right back where I started 15 years ago.
Well, the world will be changed again.
You stopped yourself from saying a better place.
I didn't stop myself because I didn't know how true that would be. The world will be
more interesting place.
Well,
if you ever watch Ari Gold,
Yes, of course. Yeah.
My hero.
Yeah. That really is Entourage is just the story of Matt Pivato.
That's me.
You would call me all the time and say, you want to see how my divorce settlement went down? Just watch the last night's episode of Entourage. I was like, huh, what? You want to see how this went down or went this route? You want to hear how my conversation with this last artist went? Watched a couple episodes ago where Ari talks to the football
just
player.
Just Google Ari Gold marriage counseling under YouTube.
Yeah. And that'll show
that's
you everything
classic.
You know.
Yes. Yeah. But no, it's. I'm excited to get back in. I'm fear would be an understatement.
Yeah, yeah.
There's gonna be a lot of people paying attention.
Yeah.
There's a void right now in the world of Texas music when it comes to independent agents. Chad Kadelk and John Folk do a great job.
Yeah, but they're about the only agency you hear of.
That's the only big agency out there. Yeah. There's a void out there. I've got a lot of phone calls over the past few months. Would you get back in? Would you get back in? And I'm thinking about it, been praying about it, and, you know, October 24th.
What do you have to lose?
What I had to lose, I already lost it a couple of years ago. So
whatever you had to lose, it's all gone now.
Yeah.
So you're starting fresh.
I'm starting clean. Starting
right
over.
Any wrongs?
And
just look forward to a new day.
I learned a lot of lessons. I've learned a lot of lessons working for myself, or I would like to say working for artists. I'm anxious to get back in. Like I said, fear would be an understatement how I feel about it.
Right.
But like you said, what do I got to lose? Except what I do have to lose is the 13 years of experience that I've gained.
Right.
That I don't want to lose.
That's right.
And, let's say 15 years, if you want to include the last 2 years. I don't want to lose that experience. And I had fun building up Corey Morrow and Roger Krager and Eli Young and working with Jack Ingram a little bit during his electric days. Bruce Robinson. And, you know, those were huge careers that I was able to play a key role in.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to look forward to getting back in and finding some of those other artists, maybe getting a few phone calls from some bigger artists.
Yeah.
But taking all the lessons I've learned from the past, whether it's from the business side, from the, God knows, the accounting side, to the personal style, personal lifestyle, I've learned a lot of lessons, and this time I don't have any excuses not to do it right.
Yeah.
From my personal life to my business life, I've started fresh on both sides just recently, and I'm excited.
Man, you sound like a reformed man. Not that there was much to reform, but we're all trying to improve ourselves.
But you know what? We're only as good. I don't regret anything I've ever done before in the past.
Right.
Just choose to do it differently next time.
Right.
And there's a lot of things I'm going to do different, like I said, from the business level to the personal level. And I've learned a lot, and I'm excited to be able to put those lessons into action. And I feel like I'm fixing to get up and I'll give you a big hug.
Well, just hope for the best. Hope for the best.
But no, it's I'm excited.
Well, rest assured, you're talking. You're here on the podcast of the world's most independent artist.
critically acclaimed independent artist.
which gets you in a room by yourself. Rest assured, people, because Matt booked a lot of shows for us for years, and then for a while we weren't, but he'd still call me with something and go, hey, you want to do this festival or do you want to play this date at the bar? I'm like, sure, you know. So rest assured, Phil Pritchett, the full band, are always for hire. Everyone's like, do you have a booking agent, Phil? I'm like, I've got about 20. I got people that call me for dates anytime they want. And if I can do it, I do it. So rest assured, hopefully we'll be on some, maybe we should just do a big old show somewhere, you know, with Craig. You know what's sad?
Mustang.
We played so many shows with Craig. I told him the other day.
When's the last time you've seen him?
Him forever. I mean, I've seen Manny, I've seen Huff.
I live right in the street.
I've run into Stormy Cooper. I've run into those guys here and there, but we played so much with him for so long, and it's kind of weird. You look up and you haven't seen him in a couple of years. It's kind of weird, you know. I'm like, God, I see everybody all the time. I really miss those Ziegenbach shows though, because that was almost like a homecoming weekend. I mean, we were all just backstage with. I mean, everybody was there watching everybody play, getting on stage with everybody, and. You know, without that, I mean, there's still some festivals like that out there, but you know, for me, like again, I'm doing a lot of private parties. I'm just recording bands. I'm not playing gigs where there's 10 other bands playing, and it's like, oh man, how you doing? I heard your new record or what? So this year, you know, I'll tell you about the ski trip up there. I'm just gonna go up there just to see some people I hadn't seen in a while, and I got the studio and the podcast just to say, hey man, I'm doing this thing, and you hadn't seen me in a while, you ought to come by. So. You know, just seek out some other ways to stick my face out there, because it gets hard when you have, like me, you have a family and a business, and you're just...
You have 8 kids or 10?
Eight now. No, we have 5 kids.
8? We have that many kids. We have 5.
Well, folks, you heard it here. The announcement, let the wire heat up. The press release has been issued. Matt Pivito is getting back into the booking business. I can hear a cell phone ringing now, and it's even on silent, and I can still hear it ringing. Unbelievable. Well, you can rest assured, put that shingle out, man, and I've got about 50 bands who've recorded here at the studio who are going to be calling you looking for dates. And occasionally, me, myself, I'm going to be calling. Hey, man. Hey, is this your event with Honey Brown? He's like, yeah, man, stick us on there, man. Okay, I'll see if I can get you on an early slot. Well, I hope it all works out for you, Matt. Great luck. Great. Thanks for sharing so openly your past, your rise, your past, the turbulent times you've had and your experience.
We use turbulence, not fall, but turbulence.
That's right. The turbulence of you know what, of any career, of any life. It's a crazy thing to reflect with somebody like yourself who's been through, knows all the same people from a different perspective, kind of. Matt Pivito has been here throwing it down, talking about his future plans, getting back in the business, all that was good and bad for all those years. Well. Whatever kills us, it just makes us stronger, right?
That's right.
Whatever didn't kill us makes us stronger. Well, that is the show. Digest that, fans out there. What? I hear people right now, heavy podcast, Phil. A four-part series with Pivito is my Ken Burns documentary on Matt Pivito. Some may never forgive me for it. This may be the end of some of my people on the show. Who knows? Well, we wish him all the best. That is our show for this week, folks, on the P2 Podcast. Remember to call me, Phil, P2, 817-733-5256. Book us for your next event, man. We do it. Whether it's in your kitchen with an acoustic guitar or out in some parking lot with a huge PA, we do it all the time. Or shoot me an email, philip.pritchard.com. Come record at the studio or send me your tracks. I'll mix it, master it, do overdubs. We do it all here. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again to Matt Pivito for the last several weeks of sharing his life and experience with us. That's all the time we have for this week on the podcast, folks. Be good to each other out there. Much tougher. Take your instincts by the reins. You better pass to rearrange what we want and what we need. As we're confused as we